Okay. Good morning, equestrians from all around the world. This is Scott Miller with the International Equine Network. We've got a lot of changes that are coming here today and throughout weather programming. One of them is going to be At the Wire, which is all about thoroughbreds, both domestic and international. And we're excited about this because the things that we're doing here on International Equine Network will be divided up now. We're going to have, for example, a program on polo, which is chukar. It'll be a 30-minute program on a weekly basis. It goes to behind the scenes, in and out of polo, domestic and international. You'll see why they play polo, how they play polo. Really informative program that we're going to do. And that'll be Thursdays. And we haven't set the dates yet or the times yet for that, but we'll be doing that here in the next week or two. At the Wire here today, we'll be coming to you every Thursday morning at 10:30. That coincides with a lot of the horsemen that they're usually through training by 10:30, somewhere along in there. And it makes it makes our programs available to them, you know, where they can sit down, relax, and listen, watch our programming on there. Another one that we're going to have is Flying Turns. It's about the harness industry. All these programs are domestic and international, and so that'll be good. The standardbred industry is such a crazy industry. It's shrinking in size, the tracks are closing, so forth, but it's gaining in popularity. People are actually going to the tracks to watch harness racing now, like the Meadowlands and Yonkers and, you know, places like that. So that's what we were excited about. And here at Sunshine Meadows, we have the largest training facility in the United States for standardbreds. We have over 750 stalls here at Sunshine Meadows, and most of those are taken up by harness people in the wintertime. Usually they start coming down in September and stay with us through April. They do that. But the harness race is exciting. It goes back to the days of the old horse and buggy, you might say, and it's been a staple around for a long time in our society. Just about everybody, you know, grandparents now have experienced, you know, some type of harness horse racing or driving or use, that, you know, that type of thing. But that's Flying Turns, and we'll be announcing the date and the time coming up here next week. And then we have what I really like is called Last Call. And I named it Last Call for one reason. I noticed over the years, the auctioneers would say in the last call at the sales, in the last call. But nowadays, with modernization and the internet and television and so forth, we have a lot of things that are available to us. You know, like they have a horse in training sale. It's about it's coming up here soon. Let me see here. That's our last call. It's called Last Call, we do all breeds of horses. Mainly right now, it's just thoroughbreds, and then we'll be doing into the standardbreds and the regular show horses type thing. But we have a thing that's coming up here. It's called Digital Diverse Sales. It's on thoroughbred horses. Bidding opens for diverse classic tips in June. Digital sales will be coming up here. And what's amazing about it is the things that I like is classic Tipton has cataloged 97 entries for the June digital sale, which may be viewed online. Bidding is now open and will close June 3rd. Beginning at 2 p.m. Now, when I named this show Last Call, like I was saying before, I did it because the auctioneer would say Last Call, and there was only one way to do it, and that was to be at the sales. Then they came up on phone bidding, and they had phone bidding, and they'd say last call, and did it come from the, you know, from on site at the sales, or did it come from the phone? And so the auctioneer would tell you. Now with the internet, all the horse sales now have internet live at the sale or on the phone, still on the phone. So that's why I named it Last Call, because we didn't know where the last call was coming from. So now they've taken this another step forward. And like I said, Facet Tipton has cataloged 97 entries for the June digital sales, which may be viewed online or on IE, or MSM Equine. That's our new name now, MSM Equine. So it'll be open there. The catalog offers horses of racing age, breeding stock, including mares with foals at foot and two-year-olds in training and yearlings. We have a diverse catalog with something for everyone, including significant number of turnkey horses. And when they say turnkey horses, that means that you'll be able to take them strictly right out of the sale, and then within a week or so, take them to the track and race them. So you got an almost instant chance to get your money back by, you know, putting them in a race in one of our tracks. They have 40 horses of racing age eligible for a variety of conditions, which is nice. That means you got ones that would fit in claiming races, allowance races, stake races, you name it, grass, or the dirt, or the PETA track. And so this is a new thing that's happening in the sales that you're going to be seeing now. And it really does help the horsemen out a lot, because it gives them an avenue to take a horse that might be mediocre on the track, and he can put in and get a, you know, hopefully get a, you know, a buyer to buy the horse. And so it just really opens up the sale of horses. And that's what it's all about, is exposure and getting your horses out there. And this is one of the ways that they're doing it. And Last Call will have $1 million horses plus that sell. They'll have horses for $1,000 that sell. And believe you me, they've had a lot of horses that sold for under $5,000 that have gone on to make $200,000-$300,000 in a racing career. But we'll bring all that to light. We'll have interviews with trainers and owners and salespeople that are, you know, running these different programs. And that's Last Call. So we'll have Chucker, which is polo. We'll have Last Call, which is horse sales of all breeds. And then we'll have Flying Turns, which is standard breeds. So those are three of the shows right there that we have on there. Plus what we're doing now is At the Wire. And like I said, it's all about thoroughbreds. We'll be doing that, you know, here today. And it's kind of exciting, because we started this journey a long time ago. I guess it's about 3 years ago, I guess it was. But we've been experimenting and doing some programs and seeing which would fit and which wouldn't. And so last week I had a difficult time deciding on, you know, what shows to bring to us. One of the shows that I forgot to tell you about is called Quest for Equine Gold, and it's about the show horse industry, and it does all disciplines in the show horse industry, and we follow horses right up to going to the Olympics, to world championships, and that's an exciting show, because you see the horses doing dressage, you see them doing cross country, you see them jumping. You know, it's really good. It's something that the whole family would really like, and that you can see. And that's called Quest for Equine Gold. But getting back to At the Wire here, we started out with At the Wire. I'm a thoroughbred guy, and I started out doing thinking about a show for thoroughbreds as I was going up and down the road and traveling with the horses, you know, thinking about, you know, what all's going on. And, you know, then I get to the track and I'd always see a trainer being interviewed when their horse arrived at the track, you know, a jockey, So a lot of different things, you know, that were going on, you know, with the industry, breeders, farm owners, like I said, jockeys, trainers, people of the backside and everything. And so I decided I put it all together in a show called At the Wire and see how that would go. We've had a lot of good results over the years with it, about the different people that we talked to and the things that we've done and tried to show, you know, and bring to the people that would be interesting. It's more than At the Wire. What I do is, you know, like I said, we do the interviews, we do everything, but we make it interesting because it's not all about the gambling and, you know, at the wire. It's about the process that we go through to get horses where we're going to. Now, last year we started running some segments on how they get there, the 2025 Kentucky Derby. And it was kind of exciting for me, because we looked at several different horses, and as you might not know, you only get 20 horses in the Kentucky Derby, and they have to earn points to get into the Derby. So each track across the country has races that give you points to get into the Derby, and so a trainer and an owner have to really plan it out, and the jockey where they're going to go with their horse. Are they going to Arkansas, Kentucky, California, you know, New York, Canada, Japan, France? You got to get the points to get into the Derby. And so what I thought was very interesting this year, and I put into it the programs every time we did one, about the reasons. Let's say you're in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and you have a fairly decent winter, not a lot of rain, not a lot of cold, you know, pretty good conditions, you know, which is good. Then let's say you're up in New York where it's snowy, rainy, you know, and that's a whole different avenue that you're going down to get to the Kentucky Derby. And same thing in California. You know, there's a lot of weather situations in California that can hold you back. And same thing in Florida. You know, that type of thing. So you got to be very careful where you put your horse. You can't be running him all over the country, you know, to these different tracks to race, because that's taxing. It takes a lot out of a horse to do it. So a lot of these trainers get in one spot and they hunker down and they said, we're going to go with what we get and try to get to the Derby. Well, this year, it was a variety of different weather conditions, from the heat to the cold to the rain. You name it, all the tracks had some kind of weather issue, you know, coming up to the Derby. And this is over, you know, a 4 or 5 month period that they had to deal with it. So they make their adjustments and they try to get their horse ready, you know, to get to the Derby. Well, this year we had about 30 horses that were pointing for the Derby. Of course, only 20 can get in. And what happened with that is that it spread the talent pool out across the country. So we get to the Derby, and there was really no significant horse that we thought was going to be, you know, the Derby winner. The talent was so good and so even. You know, you got 20 horses. You got conditions which we had, you know, a little bit of an off track because they had a lot of rain there. You got a 20-horse field. You got speed. You got distance. There's a lot of things, you know, that went into it this year. So it was really a good Derby. So after the Derby was over, we thought it would be kind of interesting to evaluate, you know, the horses coming out of the Derby. Well, to be honest with you, there was really, in my opinion, there was really no outstanding horse that came out of it. I figured that the Preakness might have a better, let's see, how would I say it, evaluation of the three-year-old crop this year. I thought the Preakness would straighten that out a little bit, because a lot of the horses, you know, didn't go on to the Preakness, you know, and that was the long and short of it. They started you know, just they rest their horse up and go for the Belmont, which the Belmont is now a mile and a quarter this year because it's at Saratoga. And so, you know, they started shuffling things around. And then when you really got down to it, you started looking at the purse money that was being offered at Monmouth Park and New York, or, you know, all the different tracks. Now they've got races for $200,000-$400,000 on the undercards of the featured race for that day, like they did at Pimlico and Churchill. So now that you've seen, you know, where your horse is at, and they get a small feel for the Preakness. Well, long story short, Preakness didn't help us out any at all. Not at all. That was the tough part about it, because now all of a sudden for the Belmont Stakes, they come up with a small field, and it's a mile and a quarter field. And I'm telling you, what's interesting about the Belmont field here is going to be why go to the Belmont. I always think, why does a trainer take a horse to where they're going? That's my first thought. You know, get in the mind of the trainer, see why they're going to the Belmont, you know, and what they're going to do about it. And the thing that gets me is now owners are starting to really push their trainers to build a resume for their horse going on down the line for retirement, for when they go into breeding. So that's what I was thinking. And I'm saying, hey, you know, do you get goaded into going to Belmont for the Belmont Stakes? You know, it's a mile and a quarter. It's not what it used to be. So what do you do? You know, what do you do with it? So I got to looking at the field, and it was an interesting field that came up. They came up with eight horses. And Journalism, Baeza were in there, Sovereignty, Rodriguez were in there, all Derby horses, all pretty good horses. But then you come up and Todd Pletcher comes up, and he's got two for the Belmont, which is a mile and a quarter again. I must reiterate that. He's got Uncaged and Crudo. And they're both long shots, but they're fresh. They were pointed for this race. They were actually pointed for this race. So they didn't have to worry about, you know, the Preakness or the Derby. These horses are prepped and ready to run. And, you know, we don't know what they're going to do, but it's going to be interesting. But the eight-horse field here, Hill Road, Sovereignty, Rodriguez, Uncaged, Crudo, Baeza, Journalism, and Heart of Honor. All good people, all good horses, all good riders, all good trainers, all good owners. This race is up for grabs. This race will be up for grabs, totally up for grabs, you know, because of small field, mile and a quarter, and some of these horses is literally pointed for this race, and others have come through by the way of, you know, Churchill and Pimlico to get to it. So on Saturday at 7:04 p.m. Eastern Time, the Belmont Stakes, presented by NYRA, will be run. You can watch it on msmequine.com, which is our new website. You can watch it on that live. We'll have 6 hours of racing coming from Saratoga on Saturday. So you'll be able to go to our website and see that without any problems. I think you'll really enjoy it. But like I said, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the Belmont Stakes. And the reason, you know, they're doing that is because now we have so many horses running. And they're running all over the country, and the racetracks have finally realized that they've got to get people into the tracks to watch the races. They got to get them in live. And so getting them in live means offering a lot of different things. Nowadays, a lot of trainers used to go from track to track to track, but the money is so good now on race days, on featured race days at the tracks, that the people are going to those tracks and they're staying. You know, like for example, the Belmont Day. You know, you have races $200,000-$400,000, good races on the grass, on a turf, long and short. You know, you have them there. You got a lot of nice 2-year-old races that you might be seeing some of those in a Derby next year, $250,000 maiden special weight. So, you know, it's all something to look at. But what I'm trying to get across here is that the tracks realize that they have to offer a lot of different things, and they've got to have the big name trainers. They got to have the big name jockeys, you know, and owners there at those tracks. And that's what they're doing by increasing these purses on the racetrack. I mean, it's just amazing, you know, what you see. Now, for example, at Belmont, of course, it's at Saratoga. It'll go back to New York here next year. The Belmont Stakes has a rich history in dating back to its inception in 1867, which means there is no shortage of interesting numbers associated with the race that is often called the Test of Champions. And that's because it's a mile and a half that it is. The number of times that Belmont preceded both the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness Stakes, it happened for the first and only time in the race history was in 2020, and that was due to the COVID, that they had to push that back. The Belmont Stakes is a mile and a quarter, not a mile and a half this year. Next year, it'll go back to being a mile and a half. The $2 win payout when Count Fleet won in 1943 was $2.10. So, you know, you spent 10, you got 10 cents back for the $2 that you worked so hard to get up there. I tell you, you know, we just start thinking about things like this. You know, it just blows your mind. The number of times the Belmonts was decided by a nose and the smallest margin of victory or less was 1905. The most recent was 2016 with Creator and Destin that ran. The number of racetracks the Belmont Stakes has been held to date to is the Jerome Park, 1867 to 1889, Morris Park, 1890 to 1904, Aqueduct, 1963 to 1967, and Belmont Park, 1905 to 2023, except when it closed for construction this past year. So they withstood the test of time, Belmont has, and that's what it's all about. Woody Stevens, a Hall of Fame trainer, won a record 5 consecutive Belmont Stakes from 1982 to 1986, a benchmark that was exceptionally difficult to equal or even to break. I was there when Woody was doing all that, and I'll never forget. A news reporter asked Woody, he said, "Mr. Stevens," he says, "how did you win all 5, you know, in a row?" And Woody just kind of looked up at him. He said, "You know," he says, "if I knew how to win a Belmont Stakes," he said, "I'd write a book, everybody'd be winning the Belmont Stakes, and I'd retire a millionaire and not have to get up every day at 4:30 in the morning." So, you know, he's basically saying you just don't know what to do or how to do it. Each horse is different, you know, but the same consistency is at the Belmont track, the Big Sandy, you know, and you got to train for the track, not for the horses. And that's what Woody Stevens did. There was just so many things, you know, here that they do at the racetracks that gets you out there. You know, I was really surprised have the number of odds on favorites who have won the Belmont from 37 horses sent off at even money. It was just amazing to see this statistic, including Tis of the Law, which was 4-5 in 2020. You know, 37 horses have gone off as a favorite and that have won the Belmont. So that was interesting to see. You know, there's so much statistics in the horse racing now, and that's what everybody, you know, is starting to realize is the statistics. You know, is it the sire? Is it the dam? Is it the trainer? Is it the track? Is it the race? You know, what does it do? You know what? There's no real reason. Nobody, one person can come up and say, hey, this is why. This is how you win. You know, you just got to take a stab at it. So on our programming here, today we have At the Wire. And like I said, we'll have five shows a week that will be coming up here, all on different phases of the horse industry, different breeds. We're going to do sales. We're going to do racing. We're going to do shows. We're going to do Olympics. We're going to do a little bit of everything out here. And that's what we want to do here. We want to make it enjoyable for the people to, you know, watch what we're doing and see what it's all about, get behind the scenes on it. Now, like Saturday, Saratoga sold out for the Belmont Stakes, 7 o'clock. We'll have the race here on MSM Equine. We'll have that. And then we'll just have to kind of go from there, you know, and see what happens. You know, I suggest that you go to your computer and Google equine or horses in your area. You would be amazed at some of the different horse events and the horse things that they have there that you can see. And one of the things that I would suggest, especially if you got kids, is go to what they call a tack shop. It's like the Walmart for horses. You go in there and you see all the bridles and the blankets and the food and the tools they use to work on horses. You don't have to know anything at all about horses. But if you go into the tack shop, you'll be amazed at what you see, you know, in there and what they use for the horses. And the other nice thing about it is most all the tack shops have little gifts that you can get, like keychains or pictures or, you know, things of that nature. And sometimes those make good birthday or Christmas gifts. You know, you don't have to be in the horses to, you know, appreciate a horse keychain or a little picture of a mare and a foal running in a field. You know, those are always kind of nice. And then what I like about that is that covers the whole gamut from the little kids right on up to the grandparents. And you'd be surprised how many times you show a grandparent a picture of a horse and they go, oh, boy, that's beautiful. And, you know, I used to have a horse because back in the day, that's what it was. A horse is a part of our society, everyday society. They were workhorses. They were horses that would get you to and from. And also that's what I like about the horse business. You know, it's got all kinds of things that you can do. And here at MSM Equine, the International Equine Report, and all the things that we do here, we'll give you the heads up and how to get to where you need to go on that. You know, and don't ever feel, you know, bad about not knowing about horses, because most of us really don't know anything. We just think we do. So with that note, I'm going to leave it until next Thursday morning at 10:30 when we'll be back on the air with At the Wire.